Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Everyone, this is the Go Long Podcast. Thank you so much for listening, sharing, supporting, and a special thank you to all of our subscribers to the newsletter at golongtd.com. And our readers may remember this conversation when we launched the newsletter back in late 20, November, December. This was one of the first Q&As that I posted with Bruce Smith. That's right, the all-time sack king, Pro Football Hall of Famer. I believe the greatest player in Buffalo Bills franchise history. Had the chance to link with Bruce, and man, we got into a lot of football, obviously, and how his body is feeling today after the hits, the concussions, nerve damage, you name it. But I think what you'll find most interesting, especially right now with July 4th around the corner, is everything that Bruce Smith has done overseas. He's visited the troops and has some really compelling stories to share about those experiences. In fact, as you'll hear here, he had hit the deck once. A little scary situation, but that perspective has really shaped Bruce Smith's life and why he wants to give back in so many ways today. So I hope you enjoyed this conversation. And over at the newsletter, if you missed it, we have a column up right now on Sammy Watkins and the effect that he can bring that Green Bay Packers locker room. Yeah, he'll help them on the field, but I think his mind and the way he thinks, all of the experiences he's been through, is going to help in that locker room. Thank you so much, everyone. What gets you up in the morning these days? What is your passion today that, you know, really gives you fulfillment?
Well, I'm recovering after surgery. An ulnar nerve transfer from playing ball. So I think this takes me up to about my 12th surgery, somewhere in that neighborhood. Pretty much while I was playing, we kept the majority of my surgeries quiet and did them during the off season and rehab during the off season at home. But I had a great medical staff with the team understanding that I was going to go out and seek the best medical, the best medical doctors that existed, and that team included Dr. Andrews, Dr. Stedman, and Dr. Yoakum, along with a gentleman by the name of Dr. Campbell down here in Virginia Beach.
And this, what kind of surgery was this again with your nerves?
Ulnar nerve. A bone was pressing on my ulnar nerve, and it causes the ring finger and the pinky finger to go numb.
Oh my God!
And it got so bad that I started having atrophy in my hands, and arms, and my fingers were going hand until I got the feeling back in them. But, you know, that doesn't make for a peaceful night's sleep when you're waking up because your fingers and hand is going numb. So they had to transfer the nerve from that location over about an inch or two, and it comes from lifting weights and obviously falling on AstroTurf, and the bone becomes, you know, damaged and it presses on the nerve. So.
Oh my God, I never heard of the ulnar nerve. I was just Googling it here while you were talking. I mean, yeah, that's about as important of a nerve as you could imagine. You know, you use it every day. I mean, that had to be kind of horrifying when you're at, it's just, the atrophy kicks in, you can't even do anything.
Well, I had my right arm done about 4 or 5 years ago and needed to get my left one done. And finally, I couldn't wait any longer. It was just interrupting my quality of life. Oh. And so it was a priority to get it done.
Is this
Thank God for the great medical attention that I had already had a relationship with.
Is it a common thing for, you know, ex-ball players to go through this point of life? I mean, do you know any other guys?
For athletes, yes, but quite frankly, it's more common for people in general to have this done as well. Having said that, obviously the beating that the body takes from playing sports, it allows it to happen more frequently.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I think the last time that, you know, we actually were, like, at least meeting face-to-face, it might have been Jim's golf event, like, 5 years ago, and I think you were pretty candid then about, you know, all the stuff that you were going through with your memory and your mind and your brain and just the effects you were seeing day-to-day. I mean, what since then, how is all of that? How is your memory doing, you know, in light of, God, you know, who knows how many concussions through your years playing?
Well, just to reflect back, I remember 3 concussions that I actually had because I was actually knocked out on the field. I was basically asleep. Oh. And they had to wake me up with smelling salts. And and on 2 of the occasions, I went back in the game. On one occasion, which was the last game of my career, I did not. So that doesn't calculate all the other times that I was dinged or I got my bell rung or just felt my head felt cloudy from hits, and you know, those are all concussions, but just as a recent, there's been so much emphasis on concussions and the concussion protocol. Now we can sit back and really understand what was happening in real time when we were out there playing, because it was a common thing to get your bell rung back during my era playing football, and even prior to that.
God knows how many instances there were with that. I mean, the 3 times that you just fell asleep on the field. I mean, you went back in twice.
No, I didn't. I was knocked out. Yeah, let's you know, make that perfectly clear. You know, waking up, not really having an account for, because it happened so quickly and abruptly. And you're waking up, and there's 80,000 people in the stands, and you really can't hear anything. or have a sense of awareness as to what's going on. And, it's pretty scary.
When were those?
One was in 2003. Another was in 2002, I believe. I think I can remember the actual games. One was against the Denver Broncos.
Yeah.
The other was against Philadelphia. And the other was the other one was when I was with the Bills. So one with the Bills, and two with the Washington football team.
I mean, we're sitting here talking, and you're sharp as a tack. I try to read everything that you've said. You're so on the top of everything going on in the world today. I mean, your brain seems to be just humming on all cylinders right now, but are you concerned later in life? Are you seeing effects are already? Where are you at with the effects of all these concussions down the road?
I'm concerned. But I think one of the things that I try and engage in is keeping my mind and my brain stimulated. From a standpoint of, I read a lot, engage in meaningful conversations. I like to be up to date on politics, policies, laws, the community. Those are the things that obviously social justice, those are the things that really kind of keeps me relatively sharp. I engage in conversations with just about knowledge is power, and when you're able to speak intelligently about a wide range of subjects, obviously this just didn't happen overnight. It was a process, and trying to have an impact on my community, and whether it be local, regional, statewide, or even a voice to a certain degree around the country. That's what this whole process was about.
For one, there's got to be an actual science to that. I mean, I've heard that with guys where if you can just stay stimulated, stay busy, you use your brain day in, day out. I mean, that can help big time and push potential symptoms way, way down the road. And part two, it's like, you love this stuff. I mean, you've always kind of wanted to change the world. I mean, you've been a humanitarian, it seems, for years and years and years, back to the, I remember you went to Africa, right? And helped with the cleft palates. And I mean, that.
Yeah, in 1999, I went to Africa with Operation Smile in a humanitarian mission called the World Journey of Hope, where we operated on children and adults with cleft palates and other facial deformities. Spent 2.5 weeks over there. I tell you, probably the most fulfilling trip that I've ever experienced in my life, just being able to be a part of this organization and the impact that it had on those that, I tell you, just some of these families would walk for a day just to get screened, just to see if they were able and if they would be on the list to be able to have this surgery. Also, the a USO trip to Iraq after the Iraqi war. Also, a military trip to South Korea to visit the troops. So, two of the trips were visiting the troops during the holidays over in Iraq. It was around the same period of time. I think it was about four or five years ago, over to South Korea. It was one, also the trip with Jared Kraft and 18 other Hall of Famers over to Israel. So these experiences that I've been able to help to shape me as a person really reinforce my thoughts and beliefs about my purpose in life and being able to help give back and make a difference.
We live in such like a myopic society. You know, we're all just kind of thinking about ourselves by and large, you know, my generation.
Yeah.
I mean, where does that come from for you to just constantly give back in every way? I mean, is there where do you draw the roots of that purpose and that desire that's like deep down inside of you?
It hasn't always been that way. I think when I was younger, I was so focused on I'd always care and wanted to help and do things, but I did those monetarily, and monetarily is one of the easiest ways you can give back. But when you commit your time, you realize that that's the you can always make money, right? More times than not. But your time is something that you're not going to be able to get back. So to be able to set aside 2.5 weeks to go over to another country and take part in a humanitarian effort, or to go and visit the troops, who I got to tell you, I probably got more out of it than the troops did, just to see the joy that was in their eyes and the words that they spoke about how appreciative that they were, that we would come over and spend that time with them. And for me, my father having been in the military, my brother having served in the military, it really felt special to me that I was afforded the opportunity to be able to spend time with them, and you know, just some of the conversations that I had with our troops, some of the ones that have had paid the ultimate sacrifice. You can't speak to the ones that have lost their lives, but the ones that have lost limbs. And you can see the scars. You can see the 80 to 90% of burns that occurred in a firefight. It really humbles you at the sacrifice that our troops make on our behalf and the behalf of the freedoms that we live and we're able to move around freely with basically without a care in the world, knowing that there are people out there, people, brave Americans that are putting their lives on the line, and their families who's making the ultimate sacrifice of being here while their sons, their daughters, their husbands, their wives, their uncles and so forth are laying everything on the line for the protection of our liberties and freedom. So I am so thankful and grateful, and all of this was a very humbling experience.
That's going to shape a worldview too. I mean, that's a perspective that just sticks with you for a lifetime. And when you're up close and visiting with these troops, are there any soldiers, any stories, you know, and anything specific that you still kind of think of to this day that was pretty jarring?
Oh man, I hell, I can remember when we were in Iraq, and when we landed at the airport, the airport looked like a war zone. It had 8 to 10 feet concrete walls built all around the city. And as we were being transported from one location to another, we were in bulletproof SUVs doing 80 miles an hour. So obviously the insurgents couldn't lock in on you and take out one of the vehicles. You know, there's the flag football game that we played in with the troops in Iraq. And you want to talk about a competitive group of men and women. They laid into us in that flag football game and actually whipped us pretty good.
Really?
We were not anticipating that. but it was a lot of fun and very competitive. And there was also a situation where we were having a pep rally the night before the game, and the insurgents started shooting rockets over into the base, and I'm trying to make the story a little shorter, but I want to make sure I give you the full impact.
Oh, go as long as you want. This is amazing.
Yeah, and so we were on stage. It was about, it must have been about 500, 600, 700 troops in this auditorium that was built, and the head general or I forget the commander of the base was introducing us all and giving a little background and so forth, and obviously the troops were fans of all the teams in the league and college wise as well. So we heard a faint boom go off, and everybody looked at one another, and what is that? Shortly thereafter, there was another boom, and the commander said, "Everyone get on the ground." And we thought to ourselves, "Oh man, they're pulling fast on us. They want to get some laughs." And then the commander said, "No, everyone get on the ground." So we got on the ground, and we're looking around. The troops are on the ground. The commander's on the ground. Everybody's on the ground. So after a few minutes, we gathered ourselves and got back and proceeded with the program. And then came a point in time that they wanted us to mingle with the troops, so we got out off the stage. Then there was another boom, but it was closer. And we had to hit the ground again. So when we hit the ground, a few of the troops jumped on top of us. And because they were taught not to let anything happen to the visitors or the guests and so forth. So I'm staring at one of the troops' faces that was kind of on top of me. And he's looking to me. He said, "Welcome to Iraq." And I said, "I want to go home. I didn't sign up for this shit." I tell you, it's like getting on one of those roller coaster rides and you start calling for your mom.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, "Oh no." My heart was beating. So just the courage. The fortitude and the inner strength of these young men and women that are in our military was incredibly inspiring. Because I take my workout clothes with me wherever I go, and I worked out with them for 3 months. I mean, during the week, we ate in the mess halls with them. We sat in meetings with them. It was just an incredible experience, and I thank God that I had the opportunity to be able to spend spend a little time with them because I can never walk in their shoes because of the sacrifice that they're making. But I just had an opportunity to conversate, rub elbows, sleep at the bunk beds, and things of that nature, and it was just an incredible experience.
That's an unbelievable story. I mean, that's day-to-day life for them then. I mean, those booms, that's...
That is day-to-day life. And it's you know, obviously we were treated a little special, although we got a chance to see, feel a little bit, just a little, a taste from first-hand experience. But this is what they do. They protect, they come to the defense. This is what they do for a living. And quite frankly, they don't get nearly the credit that they deserve.
That perspective that you got on that trip, I just feel like, man, that is something we all should have. You know, that these are the men and women defending our liberties day in, day out, and it's not talked about, it's not thought about, it's just so far in the back of our minds that it's a shame, really. I don't. How do we change that?
Yeah, well, the narrative is, the narrative should be, and is, these are our true heroes. Yeah. We would not be the country that we are without our military. And so we talk about sports figures, we talk about folks that have, you know, impacted our lives from a entertainment standpoint and so forth. We are legends of a game, but these folks that are in our military are heroes, and they put it all on the line.
So well said. And I just keep thinking about you too. I mean, well, first of all, what year was that again when you went out there
to Iraq?
Yeah.
When was it? I think that was in 2008.
Oh wait. Just watching the football life, which I gotta say, I watch all those. Yours has got to be the best. That was just phenomenal. Just to follow your personal growth over the years. When you think back at a young Bruce Smith, you know, coming in the league like you did. I mean, God, Jim and Tasker and those guys didn't hold back, calling you arrogant and selfish and cocky and all that. How far have you just come yourself from a young Bruce to this perspective that you have on the world today?
Well, that's the one good thing about our family, in our era of playing in Buffalo. We were all basically blue-collar kids that were drafted and played in a blue-collar town. I myself, from my parents' background, of being blue-collar workers, I understood hard work and the sacrifices that need to be made, and the maturation process that needed to unfold. I just didn't know how to do it. I needed direction, like most young adults. We need direction. We need guidance. And the smart ones are receptive to it, and the smart ones apply it to their day-to-day life and day-to-day routine. This maturation process started with my parents, again, who went to work at sunup and came home at sundown, and they were not jobs that one would enjoy doing. And, you know, that process continued with my high school football and basketball coach, and then my college coach, and then obviously, with Marv Levy and Rusty Jones. So I took bits and pieces of information from each and every one that came into my life and tried to get something out of it and learn something and apply it. You know, from Rusty Jones, eating habits and conditioning and working out, and body fat. From Ted Cottrell, how to study film. From Marv Levy, how to be a professional. My parents, hard work, and how to treat people, being a man of your word, and so forth. So that's how this whole process untold it, and quite frankly, it's still unfolding as we speak. After I left the game, understanding or trying to get a better gauge on how I could better help my community, and you know, one of the ways of doing that is equal opportunity and the disparities that exist, and when you start talking about disparities, we're not talking about handouts, we're not talking about gifts or set-asides, we're talking about opportunity, opportunity to be successful, but that doesn't happen when you're 17, 18, 25, 30 years old. It starts when you start looking at these neighborhoods that don't have the funding in their school district because of the zip code or an area code. You're talking about housing disparities, healthcare disparities, and the inequities and inequalities that exist. So there's just so many things that all human beings, all of us, if we want this country to continue to be thought of as the leader in the free world, we all have to do our part to make that happen.
So how do you apply it then? How
are you trying to bring about change in your community there and, you know, at that grassroots level to get this country to where you want it to be?
Well, you have to be engaged. You have to be on the ground. And then you have to find politicians that create policies and laws that can help to make these communities better.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, we all talk about the presidency and how everyone needs to vote for a president. But the body that impacts your life on a day-to-day basis and has probably a more greater impact on your community is local politics.
Yeah, that's so true.
Your city council. Then you move from your city council to your state elected officials. Your state elected officials, and obviously, then you're starting to talk about the presidency. But you really have to focus your attention on your local politics and hold them accountable to making your neighborhoods, your community, your school systems that much better. What are they doing with your tax dollars? What are the policies that they're creating? So that's what I've been trying to focus on.
I mean, just how much hope do you have that, you know, brighter days are ahead and we can just improve our communities to where they need to be?
Well, brighter days are ahead of us. But we as a people, we have to embrace one another. We have to understand that, first of all, we have to understand the disparities that exist within our communities and across this country.
Before I lose you, too, I don't know if you wanted to get into any football. Like, when you look back at your career, is there a way you want to be remembered? Is there something you want to come to mind for people when they think of Bruce Smith, the football player?
You know, the thing that's been, for me, is that his body of work speaks for itself. The transformation of this young, wet behind the ears kid, you know, first player picked in the draft, and the transformation that took place over a relatively short period of time was one that mirrored his upbringing by his parents. But it's the body of work, and when we say that body of work, it wasn't a body of work that happened over 4 or 5 years or 8 or 9 years. We're talking about a 19-year body of work. 19 years in a 3-4 defensive scheme, whereas when you put your hand in the dirt, that's a man's world. No disrespect to the wide receivers, to the defensive backs, running backs. So, but when you play on the defensive line, that is a man's world. So would I want to be remembered? And this is not gloating or boasting or bragging. It's just stating the all-time sack leader. More tackles in NFL history than any other defensive lineman that ever played in the game. That body of work speaks for itself, and I think I can leave it at that.
God knows how many sacks you would have had if you're screaming off the edge every play like the guys today.
Oh yeah, yeah. Or if I had another pass rusher.
All the attention was on you every game.
Yeah, you know, you look at, you have to throw Reggie out there. Reggie had Clyde Simmons and Sean Jones. They both had over 110 sacks, I think. Clyde had 113, and Sean Jones had 121. Yeah, so
and 4-3s.
The closest that I had was, I think, Phil Hansen, who had 60.
They're in 4-3s. You're in 3-4s, defending the run.
Right.
Totally different era.
In a 3-4 defensive line, you're known for making tackles. In a 4-3, you're known for making sacks. But to have that combination of being able to do both speaks for itself.
What do you think just made you different as a, you know, as a player, as a pass rusher, your style? I mean, I just loved how Boomer Esiason put it. He just said, fast, agile, and angry in your talk. Like, to you, what was your difference, you know, than any other player that ever played the game, just your style of play?
My style was just totally, completely different from any other in that era. Leverage, speed, my athleticism, power, agility. And I got a lot of those athletic qualities from playing basketball and having balance. And even though I was a bigger man, when I lost all of that weight, it provided me with endurance. And once I did that, that's when I became a player that could play for a whole game. And then when I put together the football IQ of being able to break down the weaknesses and strengths of an offensive lineman, and then when I learned the tendencies of specific offenses when they lined up in certain formations, from Chuck Lester and Ted Cottrell, that's when that light switch went off. And, you know, as they say, the rest is history.
Oh, and that turning point in 88. At that point, you know, when you're suspended, your career can kind of really go one or two directions, and you just turned it on. I mean, what a lesson for, you know, every player that ever plays the game, right? I mean, that's a point in your life when things could have gone another direction, and you took it the right direction.
Right. Well, I had some good people in my life, and I thank God for everyone that He has put in my life, good or bad, because, you know, you can learn from every situation, and that's what I chose to do, and I made the best of it, and you know, I'm blessed, I'm grateful, and I'm thankful for everyone that God put in my life.
And you're finding your purpose today. I mean, that's so key for everybody that's played the game, to find that reason to get up in the morning, something that excites you, and you're literally changing the world, man. It's unbelievable.
It's a blessing to be able to do your part.